of Ways and Means Committee to order that the record reflect the Title 183A on Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. Members present are Vice Chair Wu, Representative Levinson, and the National Party, we don't really want to try to move back.
Thank you.
for Mayor Cosgrove. Yes. All right. Next week, we're going to have Jennifer Jackson with the Alaska Municipal Authority.
Thank you. For the report, Nelson Gath, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. And we appreciate this opportunity. I hadn't planned on commenting on the tenure plan, but it's great to be able to follow And we're both commenting on the need for collaboration and cooperation. And I think that's the spirit that I approached this presentation with. How can we, municipal government and state government, be better partners in thinking about where Alaska's headed? Last year, as the legislature has deliberated upon the structural budget deficit facing the state, we went through a couple different exercises to pull all information together and think about the state's fiscal picture and how it relates to local government. So the graph on the left in fishing expenditures in the 10-year budget, this is from last year. But I don't know that it demonstrates a very different picture than the 10-year plan this year. And the four lines that you see there are tied to four different types of assumptions related to inflation, and I think they speak for themselves. And as much as the assumptions that go into the current tenure plan are going to be going to project for a very limited growth trajectory, if we use different assumptions, with a different starting place and inflation impact on more programs, 1.5% is Alaska a very different budget projection. You can look at public funds, inflation adjustment, or the first terms around government inflation adjustments. I think differently about where we might be headed and how inflation will impact revenues into expenses in the state. It's interesting. I think that under the ARPA legislation, American Rescue Plan, that delivered billions of dollars into Alaska. One of the functions by Treasury is that to evaluate lost revenue, we should base that on the average revenue growth of states, which is 4.2%. That's twice as much as almost any other assumption that goes into the planning that we do. In Alaska related to inflation as we move forward. I haven't plugged in 4.2% to this, but it does kind of help us think about why does that look differently in other states? How are they planning for 4% growth over time? And what kinds of adjustments do they make to be able to do that? I think it's critical when we're thinking about the 10-year plan that inflation, if it is being applied, it's only being applied to certain programs. So it excludes, to a large extent, any transfers to government partners, like local governments or school districts or nonprofits. The best example I have of that is community assistance, and you can see from the graph on the right. If you look at where the community assistance program started, just for inflation, we've been talking about a community assistance program that's 10 times the amount that's being distributed or should be distributed in this year. And what you see isn't a picture that's just present in this administration or this legislature. Really, what we're talking about and how we think about planning for the future, how we don't adjust for inflation as it relates to the state's partners. Is that we're asking those partners to do less with us over time. We're asking them to do more with us in the experience of less with us. And that graph related to community assistance, the state's got the same expectations that local governments will hold their communities whole during this period to provide the services the Alaska residents depend on. The experience at the local level, however, is that they just have less and less resources, fewer resources to do that. for you. And recognize that even just recently, 7 or 8 years ago, we collaborated to the community assistance program that was part of this whole process. But in this year, we're almost $10 million below what statute requires in terms of the payment that collaborators should be going out to communities. And that being said, for a lot of communities, they're faced with closing their doors. And that was when community assistance went away back in the early 2000s. That's what happened. In communities, closed their doors to dozens of others, substantially reduced what they were doing. Sales taxes increased during that period because of not having that state support. So we know what this looks like when the state reduces support to local governments. And I think you can think about those in terms of what you're going to do as we move forward. Right? What is the kind of assistance? What's the baseline foundational support that local governments need to be able to do the things that the state expects of local subdivisions? It's also, when it comes to the tenure plan, it's clear that there are certain policy assumptions that come out of the statute that are driven by any administration. But also by history, and you can see how the plan reflects on how change or growth has occurred over time. And it hasn't been statutory so much as whether or not change may occur within the legislature or administration. Finally, and I think this is probably the most relevant to why don't we anticipate revenue growth of 4.2%. Our revenue isn't tied to population or economic development or growth as a state. It's tied to volatility of resource development. And today, maybe more stably, investment revenue. Now, that's very different than any other state in America where the activity at a local level, the economy that is occurring within our communities is really reflected in the state budget. I do want to come to grips with how OMB approaches a 10-year fiscal outlook discussion. I think it's significant that the 10-year plan is presented as the fiscal outlook discussion. And within the 10-year plan, it walks through all the assumptions that OMB will make as it reflects back on the next 10 years. My approach is I'm not going to go through it. There are some things in here that would concern us. Things like planning for 50% repayment of school board debt reimbursement. Things like not fully capitalizing community assistance and rural school construction. All of those things I think are all highlighted in this next slide. But I do want to think about if we put municipal fiscal planning hat on, we want to think about it in those terms. So the column under consideration are just suggestions that I would offer to this committee to be thinking about. If we did want to have a more robust or differently robust kind of plan, what would be the things that need to go into that? And I think fundamentally, if we want different outcomes, we really need to be thinking about more increased revenue. So that's why I would be just at the municipal level and would be evaluating changes to your bill rate, which are really incremental and over time, but really directly responsive to the needs within the community. They go up and down in our densities that are based on either what they have as priorities or what their expectations and cost shifting are having occurred. From the state level. I think municipal governments are looking at where to just taxes as much as possible or keep those steady. There's a lot of good examples of having increased for sale tax or property taxes to specific priorities that municipalities might have. Fundamentally, we think local governments think about planning for the future in terms of we have how we make sure that we have a really necessary to meet those priorities. And a lot of those assumptions are based on economic growth related to population and economic development. Costs increase relative to national gains and sort of revenues relatedly. Mr. Bauer actually proposed that for our team to start achieve goals that we set out. We anticipate the healthcare costs are modest, and in fact, increasing rapidly in the last few years. We know that that's not the same thing as Medicaid increases in control. The state might have been, and local governments, especially, as many other employers are feeling keenly the high cost of health care right now. Local governments have robust debt schedules. Thinking about debt in ways that reflect their repairing capacity. If you can't pay for a project right now, is the debt that you can take on through the Western Bond Bank Authority or on your own to meet the needs of the community for these families and needs in the future. They're looking at education. I would say that for each of the programs, starting from education, for instance, should be tied to goals for education to provide greater educational attainment. We would recommend to do that. If you want to increase, per student effectiveness, and lower the data burden, I think there's a priority that would be reflected in your ten-year plan. Right now, the degree to which the per student system is not funded, including student states, on the health payment, the employer contribution that local governments are making. Finally, local governments rely on their charters and codes to determine what are the fundamental responsibilities they have. In the state's case, it would be things like public education, public health, public welfare, and university system. So that's where local governments fall back to one of the things that citizens demand of them as well as many communities. Finally, there's a second problem. We know that the inability to meet infrastructure needs leads to slower economic growth, and I'll talk more about that.
Before you go on to that, if I could go back to the previous slide, if we look at the construction expenditures in the two-year budget, you identify 1.5% inflation rate, that was the blue, and then inflation rates set by three other programs. Could you describe what the inflation rates were attached to these?
Yeah. Yes, just moments. It's my understanding of the approach to the ten-year plan is that only certain things are included in inflation adjustments in the future. So, last year was 10-year plan, there was an adjustment down for one-time spending or something that reduced what the base funding would be. And only if they had, half percent or one to certain things within their budget. There was stuff, other things that were made, but inflation's only applied to. So, the blue line is, I think those, if you backed out those one time expenses and brought the baseline budget back up to the right number and applied 1.5% across the board, that's where you get the blue line. I think APFC, maybe the difference between APFC and PERS is 2 and 2.25%. So it's a bit of a range on your assumptions in how they're thinking about inflation.
Yeah, I think when we heard from BU, it's pretty clear that their numbers were pretty above average, but realistic, given that the cost of the actual inflation is much higher than the numbers that they made. They deal with something in that, about the $750 million profit savings, as well as using long term money to provide funding for ongoing expenses on a regular basis. Are there any other questions on this topic? Any questions on this slide? I'd love to talk about fiscal policy assumptions. All right.
training, adequate funding for insurance, equipment, get out of the pay and not pay anything. For examples, I think the US should make $10 an hour, and there are custom standards that they provide that would seem to do a license. I could add to this list, and maybe it should be the last one, the higher sales tools in future years. It is the numbers of 50 million that needs to be in there. So when we think about where we're at, what current budget isn't where we should be necessarily, because really what we're talking about is a very different number. For this committee, I think it's best to be thinking about how we pay for these very basic elements obligations of the state as it relates to local governments.
Does the Boston Municipal League wrestle with the decision about what should be a state responsibility and what should be a local responsibility? And in terms of this, of this slide, you have down first from the bottom mandatory exemptions for, I think, senior property taxes and bedroom property taxes. There's a state statute for that. And it was predicated on the state reimbursing the municipalities for the lost revenue. That's definitely something that is in our ballpark, it would seem to me. And again, the other extreme, there's a public television and radio ask for $5.5 million, which doesn't seem like A, a local concern, or B, a state responsibility. And I'm like, how do you wrestle with what you do provided by the state and what is actually, if we think we want it as a municipality or a local community, we should pay for it for ourselves?
I don't know.
No.
There's a box in the chair. Responsibilities is very, very different. So there's not a one size fits all to any of these programs. And if a program like community assistance were to go away, there are some communities who may not think. And if community do this in Central Ohio and for another group of communities, they would go away. So I think when you get to those relationships, you really have to, we have to think about how do we make this a partnership where it's not just cost sharing, where it's not just one size fits all, moving from the state to the local level, but the state can be responsive to the local control and local capacity. The fourth tier is really getting those internet costs where our residents depend on. So things like public television, from both mayors, in their presentations as well, is how deeply concerned they are for keeping their communities whole. And what that means is families who want to live there and jobs for residents, schools that the kids can go to, and all the opportunities that they can present their residents as much as possible. Every time you remove an asset in a community level, it increases the opportunity for destabilizing that community. And that's where I think there's an added emphasis on things like public television.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually,
I love that you're telling you a follow-up. I do want to let you know that we're looking at future sharing on how Alaska's unique economic and legal structure made Alaska state government responsible for a broader range of services that state governments power and law rights. I just want you to be aware of that. That's good.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Yes, I think that Alaska is unique by saying that, but it's part of it. Is there a written report or something that we might be able to get from the municipal league that just tells me what they're thinking on individuals like that?
Through the chair, I think I can provide that to the committee from our resources being able to make more of enough for
example. We might not always agree, but we need to know what each other is thinking.
services, but there is a plan out 30. We're talking about closing communities, closing apartments. It's not right then when bankrupt, I don't think there's actually anything to do with that or set it down. But then it seems operations, so all the things like managing the landfill or utility or animal control, all of those things that might occur in a small community. Finding reports with the state, supporting state elections, managing RDA elections on behalf of the state, all of those things on behalf of the customer.
Yeah, so is it very true that when that happens, not everyone lives in the size of these communities, but a lot of them, I'm sure you have some small communities, but very true that very a lot of people do use such a service list on the color. Living there becomes more challenging.
Well, I'm not sure about that. The communities are remaining, community residents, stay where they've always been. The city operations are the cities, just to be clear about that distinction. It's not primary. There are definitely cities that have closed forever, but really it's until some service that has the capacity within that community to reinstate it, or like city council and the government structure and those services. The services might end up being provided by the state. There's a lot of making it the local government's point of view, or back to the state, to have as many responsibilities, just like if the community were unincorporated in an organized borough. That's obviously the same.
All right, any other questions or sorry? Thank you, Chase Miles. I think I'm wondering, looking at the stabilizing that state budget list, are you saying from a municipal standpoint, we would be meeting our state constitutional requirement mandate to fund schools if we gave an additional $30 million over?
Sorry, I will not say that.
How do you think we're doing in meeting our requirement and constitutional mandate to maintain our schools?
Through the chair, Representative Story, it's hard to say. I think ANL members have a position that public education should be fully funded. It's really hard to define what fully funded looks like. I think that when, especially as it relates to the type of responsible the future between us, it's easier maybe for us to look at what that deficiency is to fight more than when it comes to education outcomes or other types of metrics for measuring state deficiency of aid for public education. I'm not sure how we would respond, but I think also it's important to recognize that the equity of the local government plan is really related to schools that have municipal school districts that rely on a local contribution that don't have any role beyond that. But they do have more rules on the school districts and major assets, so that would be more direct relationship with education function and it's not education more broadly.
And on the point of education, we have a block in our state ranking compared to our sister member states across the country. If we move now for the implementation of the accounted for kids count, and we spend $500 less per capita per child in Seattle, Alaska for public education than we did in fiscal year 08, and that number is even a larger difference. If you look at the FY07, which is our peak investment in public education, that those numbers are worth adjusting for inflation because in absolute numbers, the dollars are higher, but the purchasing power of the public can be aware of that the issue of inflation and how that reduces your buying power. And so we're seeing a correlation between our reduced investment in public education
opinion of outcomes in the classroom as it states. And we will hear more about that when we hear how SPELCH is being managed in the next 2 weeks of this meeting. Perhaps.
Thank you, Ms. Barber. I'll be looking for the discussion of because education is a case in point that we need to reach some sort of an agreement on what the obligation of the state is according to the Constitution and who's going to define it. I think that would be a valuable conclusion to reach. So if they do something,
if they do something,
I agree.
Yeah. That does something.
Yeah. Just offer a permit to the law. With all respect, I don't think we're ever going to reach that conclusion during our careers. So, the historical record proves more societies that we lose most cases. So, if we went around and said, who's in charge of making the final decision of doing the evaluation? People just don't know this quickly. So, I'm concerned with waiting for this perfect solution that everyone agrees.
There's a lot of different opinions about it, but there are some metrics that we can look at that can help us to understand, what our investment has been, what local jurisdictions across the state have been investing in public education, and that correlation between that and our dropping and our state-to-state comparison.
Some being required.
it's not to say that you shouldn't anticipate or be able to approach reinstating the program. And it could be $100 million in debt liability is a good number to be thinking about how to manage investment into school infrastructure. And I think that could be part of a planning effort. And we know that without the program, and DS has said that the Department of Education has led the state for more competition for limited funds. And you see that board in the numbers below that in FY15 the request by municipalities for funds through the Meetings Grant Program was $72 million, and for the IDAs it was $98 million. That has really reversed itself since the moratorium, where municipalities are more likely to request funds under that program in IDAs less so. The two other things I was standing on this slide one. This isn't a 4-year program or a 2-year program. This is a life dependent state approach over 20 plus years of underfunding school construction and major maintenance. The average amount funded relative to the needs of trust by school districts is only 14%, or roughly 8% of projects have been funded over that period. So we're talking about decades long overfunding of this issue. It's important to know, I think, that these requires districts to submit a 6-year plan. Right now it reflects $1.3 billion in community ties to it. If you actually look at the average request of the past, that number is more like $2.8 billion. And you have to take that account that districts don't submit project needs anymore because it costs to submit something, and the likelihood of receiving funds for the project they submitted is 8%. So that's school construction major maintenance in the snapshot.
All right, any questions on this slide?
Yes, Chair, Mr. Mishrick, you reminded where we stand on the moratorium, having a moratorium that's been planned. And is there a bill in the software that we extend the moratorium? I mean, you talked about the fix of the moratorium is to just let it end.
Some changes in the minister, I believe the moratorium is supposed to be the last year, but it's extended for part of the year. I think that's right. I think you have to come up in where is the moratorium? I think that I'll come up with you when we actually have room to do that. In conclusion, just as I started in the spirit of cooperation, collaboration, partnership, I think local governments want to be part of the process that strengthens the hospice communities. It's not just up to the state to do this. And even thinking about it in a 10-year plan, I think there are things that local governments and how they approach these issues could contribute. I think a starting place is to identify priorities. It's not the priorities of any one administration, it's the priorities that maybe we all have, and maybe this community will see that some sure can help to contribute what those priorities look like. So some of it kind of falls back on the constitutional responsibilities of the state, public education, public safety, health, welfare. All of those things should and have to be priorities by the state. I think everything else is a little bit secondary, even though I didn't approach it that way in listing here. If the state does education and safety and health well, if it manages its infrastructure well, and addresses infrastructure gaps well, that all leads to economic development, economic growth, reversing out migration, improved quality of life. Those aren't things that you have to do necessarily, but if you do the things you're responsible for really well, you can afford to fund them, and that makes the opportunities at the local level to assist with everything else that much easier. increased number of years and for increased volumes of the state level. Right now, you don't have a revenue structure that corresponds to economic growth. And until you've got that feedback loop between economic activity and state spending, it's probably really hard, I think, to project out a 10-year plan for how to measure what matters. I think as part of that process, I think you'll have to continue to evaluate the impact to Alaska being probably the lowest tax burden in the nation. And if you consider that tax burden, increasing that tax burden, what that would mean, and I think there's lots of analysis that goes into that beyond a distributional analysis. It's important to think about where we want to end up on the other side of that. Yes, the state will continue to leverage as a random resource base, but it would be great to be part of a process that really thinks through what are the scenarios that we're hoping for, and how to leverage current economic structure, that needed resource base, and long term investment savings for these anticipated futures. I think as part of that process, if we encourage this body's legislature to strengthen its partnerships, look at being responsive to local governments. That was a priority of local control, but it was a varying level of ability to do as much as they might like. So think about how to negotiate agreements that the state will uphold. And it will enhance the work at the local level. And collaboration surely needs to extend to collaboration with the local governments. And to be mindful of what our current programs that the state's currently doing that could be better delivered by others. And with that, I think I will close. And just to note that in closing, we did put a lot of time into thinking about the state's structural deficit and fiscal future. Visiting the fiscal futures.com, we're going to learn that from the state program, how it doesn't impact local governments, and why it's on the more list for priorities.
Thank you, Chair. For the Chair, Mr. Anderson, just to ask the public point to identify current programs that could be brought over by the private sector, do any of those rise to the top and be discussed by different municipalities?
Arthur Story, from the Chair. I think I've got no is the answer. To some extent, because it hasn't been a useful role to evaluate the effectiveness of state programs or where they might move forward. I think there are two starting points. One would be to look at programs that are funded through DGF, designated general funds. And two, you could look at the Department of Administration's Excel for all the different fees that occur at the state level. Think about where programs are funded that don't require state subsidy beyond that, and is it state that's the appropriate deliverer of those programs? Those would be two starting places, maybe.
Thank you. All right, Dr. Gaston.
Thank you. So, if not, it's a good one. The first question I would think about that bullet point. Yes, I'm trying to think of what would be the self-interest of a liberal government. It might be relative to private, shifting things to the private sector. It might be in opposition because people's jobs would be lost. There would also be the concern that the product of whatever the program was, or the service, wouldn't have a government agency to go through. Maybe I'm being cynical, but is this currently in a state isn't providing what we need for what we used to, and we want to break this kind of economic system. You tell us what they're going to do, but we're not going to keep doing all these things. I mean, I'm just trying to get the sense of
perhaps I can also think through the chair. There are big pros and cons in all of that consideration. I think local government could have lots to say about a lot of different programs that would be on the. So we certainly saw that play out when it came to the DMV and all the closures that were shifting. So it's not saying by any means that it would be a wholesale shifting to the private sector. I do think, though, if the state were connected to economic activity differently, they would look at those programs in a different kind of way. It doesn't have to provide all the services that might happen, but at the local level, they would deliver better private sector. And there's no reason to structure that divestment or whatever that looks like without some kind of insurance of continuing to meet the public interest in your ways to maybe approach that at the state.
I think it's very hectic in a certain world, but the health and social services are doing a lot of nice fun, but I'm sure feeling the government should have felt the worry of health and social services programs to the nonprofit sector. Getting the things that are done by social services agencies and where it's a scale that used to be done by the public sector and are now done by the nonprofit sector, it will just flag for everybody that we're now seeing, rate reduction and grants that people are able to cost of delivering those services. And so what we're doing is shifting the structural deficit and to local nonprofits, which then are not always able to pay their employees a living wage. So there are unintended consequences to that if we don't do it really well. But that is an example of something that we've done where nonprofits are designed to have a public benefit.
A couple of comments in the Department of Public Safety committee hearing that I was in. There was almost an argument state troopers being assigned to, in this case, the government was between the Fairway College and the City of Fairway and the City of Fairbanks would provide itself and doesn't want to pay for troopers provided in the nature. It's a difference in opinion. It can happen all the time. But that's the thing we need to sort out. And another suggestion, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the Fairbanks Minnesota Borough developed a process for evaluating their capital improvement program that was a deliberate pattern that they went through. They decided on a bunch of questions and they evaluated everything according to the same questions. Not perfect, but a certain improvement over what we were doing before. So I'm going to thank you for a pattern of that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to me today, Mr. Ryan Dorsey. Next up, we're going to go to Christiana Maldley, who is the new president of the Associated Founders and Co-Founders of the Oscar Miss Maldley.
Good morning. We are here to take the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Lisa Maldley. I am a very new president of the Associated Founders and Co-Founders of the Oscar Chapter. ABC was founded in 1950. The Center for Cancer came down out of Baltimore, Maryland to play in the 50s and based on the shortwave of the construction project, should be awarded a merit to the most qualified and responsible of all veterans. Nationally, there are over 23,000 members, and the Alaska chapter represents 126 companies that operate the largest apprenticeship program in the state. The champion the ideals of great upgrades, developing training, the workforce, and providing contractors the resources required to succeed in ever-changing local contracting. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the importance of a stable and steady capital budget and how it will impact ABC more than other contractors around the state. ABC supports thoughtful long-term planning for capital budgets that focus on meeting Alaska's infrastructure needs while offering consistent funding that allows the board to adapt to the rapidly changing market. This includes aligning for
almost feel like even these information that a lawyer in the Commonwealth Committee is going to be holding a hearing on Friday, and I believe another one following the holding at the Andrew Fox Journal and Donald Spock, and what it could mean for our state and serving and be prepared for the workforce issues that we expect to come down the pipe. All right, are there any other questions or comments today? Perhaps.
If there's no choice, I would like to say thank you. Jay me from writing speech. You said what I was going to say. But again, I'd encourage the Associated Board of Directors to look at that capital improvement program that the Veterans Question Bureau has developed. That's a good starting point for how to evaluate projects and stabilize our capital budget.
Small payers, I don't know if you possibly paid attention to the previous presentation by Neil and Jason, but the concept of tying our revenue to somehow linked to GDP or the growth of our economy was stated, and you also stated that it can be part of the capital budget and not just relying on the infusion of federal money in various and announcements we've witnessed. Do you support, in theory, having revenue somehow moving or linked to GDP or economic growth?
Association of School Boards of Alaska, Council of School Administrators, and other community resources that have been involved in the meeting and the meetings, but taking those further business before the committee, this meeting is going to be at 12:54.